Pinksters.com is a new social media where you can post legal content and engage in free speech without algorithms and censorships. You don't get shadow banned, period. Sell your legal content without fear and share your social media updates, all in the same place.
Try out the all-new social media site, Pinksters.com. PINXSTERS.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Stripped by Sia, your podcast for strippers, sex workers, and all the fancy naked people in between. I'm your host, Steph Sia, aka Kimchi on stage, aka Sia on camera, on webcamming and streaming and all that stuff. If you missed me live, that's okay. We are going to be back at some other point in the year. Maybe it'll be in April at this point. So I'm really going to enjoy this time off since dancing is so physical, and just focus a lot of my time online, actually. So start streaming again. That's been fun. It's been a journey. So you can catch me online on StreamAid exclusively under the Sia on Camera alias. And yeah, if you are brand new here, this show is all about destigmatizing sex work by telling the lived experiences and stories of sex workers. And I do that by bringing different guests on every single week to share their own lived experience about their corner of the industry. So guests vary from, you know, model, talent, porn stars, to nonprofit organizations, to professors at universities that work in sex work. And it has been a really crazy journey over the past 5 years. Really happy to continue creating and giving people space to share their stories, to really humanize sex workers. And of course, this week is no different. We're going to be talking about PASS certified. So if you are in porn, you will know what PASS is, I would hope. We are going to go into what PASS is, and what that governing body is, who they serve, what that means, how you can get accreditation and whatnot. But before we get into all that fun stuff, I am going to quickly say hello to the lovely Patreon subscribers. Hello, there are some new people in here that have joined for free, which I don't know how that happened, but that's okay. I'm happy to share some content there as well. There isn't a lot that's publicly available if you're not paying, but tiers do start at $4 a month, and you can gain access to exclusive video content. You get early access to all the episodes, raw, uncut video, behind the scenes footage. Yeah, it's a lot of bonus episodes, one that's going to be coming out next week, which is really exciting. Yeah, lots of fun stuff on there. You can kind of see what episodes are coming up, what topics I'm kind of pondering on and guests I'm wanting to bring onto the show. So, and if you are on the second and third tier, you do get a fan recognition shout out on every single episode, including this one. So just going to quickly say hello to Snoo Snoo from Germany. We've got Justin Erickson from Vancouver, Washington. We've got Geyser, Selena Money, Moxie Mayhem, Eric Raho, B. York from Seattle, McKenna King from Edmonton, and we've got Dan from Red Door Products from Seattle area as well. So thank you all so much. And of course, if you are curious where your dollars are going, I'll tell you exactly where it's going. It goes to website hosting, because that is a cost and it's not free. Also, it also helps kind of take off some of the funds that go into adult industry events, because those are also not free and those can get pretty expensive as well. So enables me to do all the stuff in order for me to gather more information to bring onto the show for you all to enjoy and use and see as you see fit. I am rambling on today because I haven't talked to humans. But yeah, you can definitely do that. Check out more information. It's patreon.com/strippedbysia. And you can get more information there or just bug me about it on Twitter. So as mentioned, we're going to be talking about PASS certified today. So if you are in porn specifically and you'll need to get tested, we are going to be talking about exactly what PASS is. And I have the executive director on with us to chat about that today. Mr. Ian O'Brien is going to be joining us today. He's going to be joining us right now, and he is patiently waiting. Ian, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Yay. Very so happy excited. To have you here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. have this conversation.
Yes, and it's going to be a great conversation. This is our third time trying to do this because of technology. I love to be upfront about it because I am no expert at technology and it likes to make my life hard. But we are here and I'm very excited to chat with you about all the things. But maybe we can start a little bit about you and how you landed here in terms of working in sex work, and maybe a little bit about your background. Wherever you want to start, feel free to go ahead.
Sure. So I have been working in sexual and reproductive rights, health and rights, my whole career. I started right out of undergrad during can you hear that? That's like crazy hail just started right now. I'm so sorry, but
that's okay. It's pissing rain here in Vancouver, so
delicious, you know. It's been quiet this whole time, but you know, we'll make it work. Right out of undergrad, I started working with a LGBT refugee organization, and kind of continued down a path of like sexual and reproductive health and rights, doing domestic and international policy work and organizing some education. It was in grad school that I actually found my way into the sex work specifically. One of my professors was friends with the executive director at the Free Speech Coalition at the time. They were going through a fight in California for Prop 60. Around condom regulations, much more than that, worker autonomy, and which is like a fundamental, we can get into what all that means later, but like it was a pivotal time for porn and public health to kind of intersect. It was also the beginning of the rise of porn as a public health crisis rhetoric. And I'd done policy work for a long time, and so we got connected, and I eventually joined the organization.
Yay! Oh my gosh, this is a great background. I didn't mention to you when we initially recorded, but I also worked in sexual health as well. So more working with like kids and teens and giving them comprehensive sexual health education right when, you know, I mean, good timing, you know, better late than never, or earlier rather than later. So that's really, really cool to hear you coming from that background as well. So you landed here in the sex work field, and was it a big shift for you at all, or was it there's so many alignments here with so many marginalized groups, like I'd love to hear about that perspective as well.
I think it was a I was like in grad school right before I joined, but also during that time I was working for with primary healthcare organizations. There's a program in the United States called the Federally Qualified Health Centers, FQHCs. Other community health centers are also what they're known by, which is really focused on primary care. And it's very like, it's a federally run program. So it's incredibly bureaucratic, very rigid. There are a lot of very specific rules around how things operate. And the transition into adult and sex work, which regulations are a lot more wild, and there's like less actual governance of how things operate, was a big change, a good change. The culture was very different, which I really enjoyed. I also think that the biggest shift for me, though, which is something that underlines PASS and kind of the uniqueness of the organization, was thinking about sexual health in terms of occupational health. So it wasn't just please get tested once every 6 months because it's good for the general population, but like, what does getting tested mean for your ability to do your job? For like, how does your health impact your ability to earn an income? Which is a very different kind of context for sexual health than other places. So
absolutely,
that was a big change.
Yeah, big change for sure. And so important because it can really impact a lot of people's lives, their livelihoods, their money, how they make money as well. But, you know, I think that's actually a really great transition to go into what PASS is for those who don't know, because again, there's so many people that listen to the show. There's so many people from like different parts of the industry and people that are not even in the industry and stuff as well. So maybe we can go with a little Spark Notes version of what PASS is and maybe like who is it for, who does it serve, and we'll go from there.
Sure. So this is PASS has a kind of long history, but I we can get into that separately. We're a 501c4 nonprofit organization. The PASS stands for a Performer Availability Screening Service. And its primary function when it was created was to provide a database of folks in the industry who were available to work based on a set of testing standards. So folks would go get tested according to the standard. Clearance of whether or not they're available to work would report to the database. And then their coworkers or production companies could look up to see if they were cleared to work. And that solved a variety of legal and medical challenges. And creating those testing standards, that specific panel is what we do today, as we create guidance for the adult industry on testing. We also put out guidance around general health and safety on set. COVID obviously evolved kind of how we think about things. Been PASS for a long time. That why I say PASS instead of the full name, Performer Availability Screening Service. One, it's pithier, but two, like I don't think when we think of adult industry workers, I think performer isn't a discrete category anymore. Like. Mm-hmm. Performers, also producers, or also directors. But also, COVID made us think of everybody's health on set and how they're all interrelated. And so that kind of changed our stuff there. So we do education work. We validate labs, give a stamp of approval of whether or not they're adhering to the set of standards according to our PASS protocols giving the correct testing panel, and we operate a number of other programs as well.
Yeah, and we're going to definitely get into everything, and that's already so great to hear, like, PASS does so much. It's more than just testing in adults. So, like, yeah, we will definitely go into the details of that, but maybe before we hop into that, Ian, maybe we can kind of go into the history a little bit, too, of, like, how it got started, because I think from what I've done in terms of my research, it was kind of branched out of the FSC or the Free Speech Coalition. In my notes, it says from 2011, and that's to standardize and monitor the adult industry testing. But I'm sure you probably have a better understanding and a better explanation than what I've Googled online.
There. And I also think I only have a piece of the story. Like, there's so much missed history, I think, in adult, mm-hmm. the nature of stigma at our work. But I'm grateful for podcasts like this that are documenting things. But
yes.
So PASS was created after an organization called AIM, Adult Industry Medical, I think it was Foundation Labs or something like that. But AIM fell apart AIM was created by a performer named Sharon Mitchell and a couple other folks in the community to address the AIDS epidemic in the 90s. It was like, hey, we've got to create some kind of standard for this community in order to make sure that we're safe while we're working. They were the ones that first created this kind of standard panel. Folks would go get tested there. And But after a series of legal challenges and some regulatory issues, AIM fell apart. And so the Free Speech Coalition, recognizing this need for centralization, and for folks who don't know, the Free Speech Coalition, or FSC, is the Trade Association for the Adult Industry, they created PASS as a program to kind of pick up that piece of AIM. It was originally called like APHSS or something before they found the name PASS as like a cute little moment.
All the acronyms.
So many acronyms. And sometimes you forget you're speaking in acronyms when you're like...
it happens.
So while AIM, when it first started, was provided testing themselves, they like partnered with their own reference labs, but like did the actual testing on location. PASS was just the database. So it partnered with, and this is still the model we use today, other testing centers and laboratories to do the collection of samples into the processing. But then like the reporting to the database was just clearance data. So PASS then and now doesn't receive any actual medical data. We just receive a binary yes, no, has this person been cleared based on the panel that we set.
So important too.
Yeah. And it operated that way. And the reason for that being to keep medical information safe. Like if the database was ever hacked or the government wanted to go collect a database full of tech worker health, they couldn't. There wouldn't be anything there. That would be meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
There's so many of our systems are kind of like built in response to the threat of state violence. But it existed that way up until the COVID pandemic when there's some major shifts in both the production landscape, obviously the healthcare landscape, and our testing partnerships. And there's a realization that PASS needed to be its standalone organization to kind of address the specific needs of the industry. And that was different than kind of the legal challenges that FSC was finding. And in 2021, we were created as our very own separate organization and have operated that way since.
There we go. Yeah. Thank you for all of that detail. Super, super informative. And also just like kind of gives context to see like how this all began and brings us to today. Currently, I'm curious. I have so many questions. Maybe I'll start with so adult industry testing. How does that differ from, say, like civilian, quote unquote, civilian testing? Is it the same or is there differences or like?
There are differences. and I think that's a very important question because I think when most folks get tested, they just see the things that they're getting tested for, right? Like HIV, chlamydia, gonorrhea, and like a lot of these things you can get tested at your local center. And many folks have experiences with free testing, which I deeply believe in and everyone should access. However, some of the differences with as testing specific to adult are that we use different kinds of assays. And what an assay is like the specific test itself for something like HIV. So we learned a little bit about this when we went through COVID. You know, there was the antibody testing versus the PCR testing. And I think that allowed
that's
folks
a good way
to
differentiate. Yeah.
COVID really changed, I think, health literacy on diagnostic testing in a great way. So so there's some subtle differences in the way that we test as an industry instead of like a civilian population. Notably, HIV testing. For most folks, like when people create screening policy, so there's a difference between testing and screening from a public health perspective. Testing is something you do to make a diagnosis. screening is something that you do to based on a set of risk factors to just kind of rule it out, see if something's present. It's kind of a simplistic way of saying it, but I'm using the terms kind of interchangeably here. But from a public health perspective, most people tops are getting tested once every 6 months. And during that, so that means you've got 6 months time frame in which to catch the potential exposures that they've had to a pathogen. So you can use testing that can take into account that something has happened over the past 6 months. For PASS, we require testing only up to 14 days. So that means we want to be able to catch exposures as early as possible. And the reason for that is we want to mitigate risk as greatly as possible. So HIV, as I mentioned, a notable exception to testing. Like when you go get tested at most free clinics, you're going to get what's called the antibody or antigen test for HIV. It's really effective. It's great. But it has a little bit longer of a detection period, or it's called a window period between when you when it could pick up.
When you can contract HIV. It.
Yeah. Right. So our test, we use a PCR or a NAT test for HIV, and it can detect HIV reliably 3 to 10 days after exposure. An antibody antigen test might be up to 3 weeks. So,
oh wow, that's significant.
Yeah. Well, and that 3 week period of time, not normally for most folks, totally acceptable. For us who want to greatly reduce risk, really important to make sure that we're accounting for the time frame.
Totally. Yeah, because an adult, and then I have interviewed a lot of different porn stars and folks that have been on the show. Yeah, have to get tested very frequently, per production, per agency, per set. It can be a lot. And I know I've spoken with some folks also at clinics too that I've also brought on the show as well, talking about cost as well in terms of this stuff is not cheap either. And, I wonder, and kind of going back to something you said earlier, does that maybe provide a barrier to those who can't afford testing as well?
Yes.
To kind of dive into that.
I think cost is a huge factor in considering folks' ability to access testing. Outside of logistically actually able to be accessing the test itself, I think it's probably the largest barrier. Particularly when it's this entry point into being able to access money. It's a consideration when we're thinking about testing, and why you might create a certain standard. We could theoretically require everybody to test the day before every shoot, but that would be logistically challenging and incredibly expensive, and yes, kind of not reduce the risk in such a substantial way as not be worth that kind of doing it every 14 days. The 14 day testing allows us to mitigate risk meaningfully without that kind of ridiculous burden of doing it every single day. So cost is a factor in weighing things. Because we're thinking about health on a population level, instead of just individual stuff, individual is absolutely important, but infectious disease, communicable disease, is something that involves the community.
Absolutely.
And so in order for it to be effective, you need to have many people participate as possible. You have to make it a possibility for as many people to participate as possible. So cost, absolutely a factor. And that's something that in our goals with PASS over the next year, something we want to address so that more people are able to, we can reduce current costs and prevent it from being an even more significant amount of folks' budget.
No, that's awesome to hear. And I'm sure later down the line in this episode, we're going to talk about like future projects and stuff that Pass is working on as well. But going back to like the standard, the industry standard, what does Pass test for those who don't know? And what kind of tests are included in something that's Pass certified?
There. We test for, I want to say, 8 pathogens now. It is gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis, trichomoniasis, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, HIV, and then we also recently, within the past 6 months, started requiring Mycoplasma genitalium or MGen testing every 30 days.
Right. Yeah, and that's a new one too, because I remember I was speaking with Amy from MyCH Health, and she was also telling us about MGen, and that's kind of like the new, I guess, STI that is kind of causing a bit of a scare in the industry. I wonder if you can share a little bit about that, if you have any knowledge on that.
Absolutely.
like yes, you do.
we've been following MGen for a long time. We were actually approached by a talent a number of years ago. I'd give her name, but I'm not entirely sure if she wants to be known. But who had struggled with a diagnosis, I want to say in like 2018, 2019. And this was before there was actually an FDA-approved test for it.
Oh, wow.
So that's how like kind of new the sexual health space is here. And so we've been thinking about it and like how to approach it for a long time. The challenge with it is, one, it's new, so there's not a lot of testing on it. There's not a lot of research on kind of how it impacts a population. And it's antibiotic resistant, very prone to antibiotic resistance.
Oh, that's terrible.
And so treatment could cause it to, like, over-treatment, mistreatment, could cause it to be something that is incredibly hard to get rid of. So diagnosing it accidentally or diagnosing it and not treating it appropriately could lead to further problems. So trying to approach it on a population level was really challenging.
Totally.
So the recent policy of 30 days is like years of work, so much consultation with infectious disease experts, public health experts, ethicists, labor rights folks. To kind of come to a decision around it.
Wow. Yeah. I know I haven't heard too much about it, but I know that like a lot of places are testing for it nowadays and having that to be mandatory. Yeah. Cause you just don't know how that's going to affect / impact folks that are affected, which can be a really, really scary thing. Like the unknown, you just don't know what that's going to do to you. So thanks for sharing a bit of that. I feel like you have the answer to everything, which is great. Excuse me. I also want to ask you, or like maybe pick your brain too, because I know that you were talking about, you know, how PASS makes medical decisions. I'm curious to hear what your take is on that. And if you can share a little bit, that would be awesome.
Absolutely. So this is something we've been working on improving our process. So a long time, there was no formal like way of making decisions. It was in consultation with the laboratories themselves, and kind of the needs of the community. And there was an informal PASS advisory committee that was put together a number of times to kind of talk about what specific needs were. What we've been wanting to do is really emphasize the ethics in that decision-making process and bring back the kind of medical decision-making as part of PASS. So we have a medical director, a volunteer medical director, who's on our board of directors, Jamie Bell. He's a nurse practitioner at the LA LGBT Center. He's actually the medical director there for their sexual health program.
Awesome.
He's amazing. And we've also recently put together a medical advisory board comprised of infectious disease physicians, public health experts, occupational health experts, industry stakeholders, and labor experts to kind of discuss, advise on our decisions moving forward. So like our goal is to make all of our decisions very transparent, why we're making them, who was involved in making those decisions, so that folks understand that this is something rooted in science, in their health, that multiple factors have been considered, and that these decisions are made in their best interest.
That's awesome. That's really, really great to hear too. And like, I'm sure that's probably been so challenging too, trying to have to create some kind of structure from scratch, from nothing, and try to consult and bring as many people on board to get behind PASS. So that's really awesome to hear, especially like with the transparency too, because I just feel like, and everyone has the right to question things, but you know, sometimes I'm sure you probably get like a lot of pushback on things as well from folks. Like, has there been any challenges that PASS has received? You're like laughing. You're like, of course.
I think we're at a period of time in which health is inherently controversial.
And can be political too.
So political.
Right.
And it always has been in porn and adult as well, right? Like, so much of our legal challenges have been based on at least cursory, in a cursory manner, like the idea of somebody's health and protecting somebody's health. So,
right.
like at the end of the day, PASS is creating a standard for and guidance for an industry, for a group of folks. And that means we're going to take into account some priorities over others, and some people will agree with those decisions and some won't. And what we want to do is make sure that you understand why we made those decisions.
Absolutely.
We've had some pretty present conflict with the former testing partners around governance and making decisions. And I think folks have been rightfully concerned as to why are these systems that are supposed to be keeping us safe feel like they're in conflict, which is challenging when you're worried about your health. You don't want your health to feel politicized. You want it to be safe. You want there to be one true answer. Really our goal moving forward is to establish that trust. So you can understand, maybe if you don't fully agree with everything that PASS is doing or why we've made a decision, you at least know why it was made and the intent behind it, so that you're able to account for that in your own decision-making processes.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense too. And sorry to hear about some pushback there and conflict, because it's never easy, especially when you're trying to do something great for the industry and something impactful for the industry. And it's hard when, you know, folks bite heads or it becomes politicized, as you've mentioned.
Yeah. I also think that's part of growing pains, right? Like, whenever there is, COVID really changed a lot of things for the industry, for the world.
For everything.
For everybody. the way content and the industry shifted, like, caused big shifts. And I think whenever you kind of change that momentum or shift directions or try something new, there's going to be those moments of like pushback and conflict. And so I at least tell myself, like, that's just an inevitable part of the process of figuring out something new.
Yeah, no, totally. And like, going back to what you said about COVID, yeah, that really was an interesting time for many parts of the industry. Like, well, honestly, very painful time for a lot of us, because like a lot of us were just out of work, especially like our industry specifically. Like, not having any contact with people. Like, what? It's crazy. Like, myself as a dancer, like, when COVID happened, like, clubs shutting down, and, you know, a lot of us had to, like, pivot our business and our business models to be online. And that was such a shift and so difficult. And I can only imagine all the changes and struggles people had to go to in the adult industry, especially, like, I can't even we had a lot of interviews during that time too, so it's just like, oh my god, it's just like so triggering. Yeah, to go back to that.
I know, like, thinking about it's such a not that we're fully out of it, but, like, particularly the first year and a half, 2 years, like, folks really changed the way we did work. And I think we've also, we use the internet in different ways now, like, different kinds of, like, intimacies and tools and, like, built there. I also think, not to overuse the word, but, like, we diversified. Like, we all realized that, yes, we needed new
we strategies. We had to.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
The industry is not unfamiliar with production holds, right, which when we stopped production because of a specific risk for a period of time, the COVID extended. But I always find it interesting that, like, innovative ways people use during those periods of times or develop during those periods of times to make money while mitigating risk.
Absolutely. Like, I was so impressed with how creative people got and with how they've had to pivot in this industry and, like, the amount of resilience that they were able to show. It was truly inspiring. I'm glad most of that's over.
It's good to be around people again with at least a somewhat reduced risk than it was.
No, totally. Question for you, and maybe you might not know, but maybe I'll just ask a question anyways. But, like, for instance, and then I'm just kind of generalized question here. But for instance, so when folks are testing and or screening and we do find a positive result, what happens after that? And I am asking out of genuine curiosity. I know, like, it's almost like a domino effect that would happen after that, but I wonder if you can kind of walk us through what generally happens at that point, yeah, from your knowledge.
That incredibly fair question, and this is also an area that I was actually just speaking with someone today about this, where we want to focus PASS on in the future. I think we spend so much time addressing this, like, pre-component, like, is somebody clear, yes, no, and then somebody gets a diagnosis, and what happens? Like,
And then what?
And it, from a PASS perspective, and a database perspective, like, they just wouldn't be cleared to work in our database.
It ends there.
If there is something like a novel HIV infection, meaning somebody who has been testing in the industry for a while, has been working frequently, and is suddenly diagnosed with HIV or another, like, serious STI, then we'd go through a potential production hold protocol. We'd be informed that somebody might test positive, would do some contact tracing stuff and figure out how to stop risk. From the person who is diagnosed perspective, what should be happening is you're informed by the lab that you've tested positive for something, and what that result means, and then you're handed off to care in some capacity.
I
think this is where the challenge in our health systems in the U.S. At least really struggle is that there is a difference frequently between the testing center and the clinic or the place that is providing you care. So it depends on the business model of the testing partner or where you're getting tested. But not everybody has both parts of that model. So there's sometimes you'll get a test and need to go be referred out to some folks. Sometimes the laboratory itself will have a clinic and a doctor that they can refer you to. But that handoff can be tricky. That's something that we really want to address. There's sometimes like folks get handed to a doctor that isn't sex worker friendly. In the case of MGen, is unfamiliar with MGen and assigns a long treatment regimen, or doesn't really understand what work clearance means in regards to treatment. We want to clean up those kind of pieces as we grow past, so that folks, when you do get something, and I made this point earlier and didn't really extrapolate more on it, but the difference between individual and public health is like when you get a diagnosis for something that is, it impacts your life, it sucks, and every diagnosis is a public health success. And what I mean by that is like when we find something, it means we've prevented it from going any further. We found it, we can treat it, it's good that you have done care work for your community. The problem is that now you're abandoned over here. We want to make sure that like we can reduce the time frame in which you're unable to work, you get the appropriate treatment and care, you know what you need to do, and then you're back working as soon as possible.
Which is awesome. Yeah, like I was really curious about that because like I'm always cognizant of like aftercare, because you know a lot of things and maybe kinks and niches that we partake in, aftercare is such an important part, an important piece, and I always want to see like how that played out in the health aspect in terms of testing, like what happens after, because no one ever talks about that kind of stuff. And like as a person that has been like diagnosed with an autoimmune disease that like greatly impacted my life, being left alone after that, it's like, okay, well now I have to do my own research on how to take care of myself and how to take care of this. And it's just, yeah, I mean, Canada isn't much better than the States, but I mean, pros and cons for both, but health things in general is always a tricky area too, and as you said too, like being handed off to folks that are not sex worker friendly, I'm always really like worried about that, and it's disappointing to hear when that happens, but it does sound like a very, very challenging piece that PASS and its clinics and laboratories kind of have to work on. And it's hard to get everyone on the same page because everyone has like a different business model and different values and stuff like that, so it's hard to get that consistency, I suppose.
Yeah
it's like, hard, it's challenging.
I think finding people that are able to provide the right testing at the right price point with the right turnaround for the industry in the right ways is hard enough. Making sure that that also intersects with like a complicated like health delivery system in which you're able to get the other parts of that care as well, also a challenge. One thing, I also think that's what PASS's responsibility is. Like navigating healthcare, it sucks. It's just like, it's complicated and terrible for everybody. There's insurance, so many different people involved, prerequisites you didn't know about, things that you need to say to your doctor that you didn't know you needed to say, unique considerations for every person. It's just, it's demoralizing for everybody. And
yes,
what I want PASS to be, what I think everybody involved with PASS wants PASS to be, is an organization that handles that complexity for you. We want your experience in health to be as streamlined as possible, to feel like you have somebody who's like thought about this and legitimately has your care in mind, and kind of streamlines you through the process. And so like so much crappy ways of having to navigate health. But that's the direction that we want to take this. Like,
that's a great goal. Exactly. No, and that's so, like, so wonderful to hear. And I'm sure I'm really going to try to keep tabs on you guys too after this interview is done, because it just sounds like you guys are doing such great work for the community, which is lovely to hear. You were talking about partners. I'm also curious to hear about how do you get, I guess, PASS certified, or like who your partners are. Is there a whole process that is involved with that? Or
it's so funny so PASS certified is like our domain name and our handle on social media, because like when we needed to pick something, we threw it on there because obviously PASS was taken. But it's really taken a life of its own, and frequently folks refer to us as PASS certified. If somebody else is handing you free branding, you just take it, right? Like, our testing partners, we do have a certification program we just launched, and I talk about that a bit. The testing partners are folks that we have contractual relationships with to offer specific services to the industry. We have five right now. I'm gonna Clear, Empower, Sage Health, Aphrodisiac yes. Wellness, and TBD Health. They're all wonderful. We have contracts with each of them that outline exactly what they should be testing for, how to report that to the database, all fun kind of contract stuff, which they agree to. We look for it's called COLA or CAP accreditation. These are accrediting bodies for laboratories. There's something called a CLIA certification, which is what you need to be able to be a clinical laboratory in the first place. COLA and CAP have kind of elevated standards that also include CLIA certification. So we make sure that's in place so that you're doing legitimate work. We have a little bit of an onboarding process so that you know what's expected. Because there is an infectious disease component and like a population health component with our partnerships, we want to make sure that we're having two-way communication as things go forward. And then we update when things go on. We're like in the past couple of years, we've asked them, past year and a half, we've asked them to add swabbing, which everyone did immediately, a huge feat for labs, and MGen, which was also a hard thing to kind of figure out and source as well. And so it's really great to have partners with labs that are like, who care about the industry, who are listening, who are willing to kind of follow our guidance and agree to the set, and then adapt as we need them to specific community needs. While our contractual agreement only outlines the specifics of like reporting to the database, frequently we'll have folks call us to ask for stuff from a certain lab or vice versa, and we act as like a negotiator or liaison there as well.
Awesome. And you also mentioned, I know that we want to make some time for this, but studio certification program, tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. So the studio certification program is something we just launched. I feel like studio is a misnomer. Like we already misnamed it. We should call it production.
No.
the idea behind it is like the production landscape changed. Like we've hinted at this through the conversation the whole time. But like when PASS first started, there are three major centers of porn production with major studios accounting for the majority of it, Vegas, LA, Miami. Now there's a bunch of people producing their own content for OnlyFans, for their own sites, for all sorts of stuff. Like the landscape has changed. So that kind of centralized system doesn't make as the much sense as it once did. With COVID and swabbing and MGen, like so many of us have kind of adapted our own standards for testing. What the certification program is a request to get everybody back on the same page. So what we do is we're asking for folks who are involved in adult content production to agree to four simple rules, follow past guidelines, adhere to production holds when we call them, maintain regular communication, just let's make sure we have updated contact information. And I want to do this twice a year, kind of like group, let's talk about what the community needs piece, and then attend an orientation, which is a one-on-one conversation with me, where I can understand kind of what your health needs are for your work, and get a sense of what you're doing to mitigate risk on set. Started with ALO and Gamma, our adult time, and Brazzers. They've got so many different brands under them. I never remember.
Yes, there's a lot.
They are part of it. We've got a number of other production companies that have jumped on as well. You'll get a cute little stamp that you're able to say that you're past certified. There'll be a list of folks that you can see. And it's really about setting clear expectations. Like, this mm-hmm. is what you can expect on set. This is what you can expect from past. This is what the community can expect from both groups. And so,
right.
It's like just our first foray to being like, let's get all back together. We know things got scattered.
Woo-hoo.
We know people are all over the place. Let's start talking together and know exactly what we can expect from each other.
That's great. Congratulations on the launch. Like, it sounds like it's pretty fresh. So I'm sure it's going to gain more traction as the year goes along. So it really, really sounds like you guys are doing so many great things, which is so great to hear. And we could probably talk for hours. I'm sure we can probably go on like a million more tangents, Ian. But this is really an eye-opening conversation, because we don't often hear from this side of the adult industry, and it's such an important part to have this perspective. So really, really happy that you're able to just share as much information as you were able to today, and hopefully give folks and give the audience a bit of a more accurate portrayal in terms of like what happens behind the scenes and what happens with testing, and also just to clear up any confusion between like, you know, civilian testing and like actual certified testing, I guess, if you want to call it that way. There was one fun little question that came in from the audience. And it's a fun question from a past guest. It is from Amy from My Sage Health. And she says, can you ask Ian why My Sage Health is past's favorite lab to work with?
All right. So I love all of my children equally. They're like all so special. Not to be sappy and overly political here, but everyone brings something different to the table that I think is really important.
Of course.
It's been really interesting for me to see how folks approach health delivery and what it means. And to Sage's point, to Amy's point, but where I was impressed by them in particular was how embedded they were already in the industry. Like, Amy comes from having worked at AVN. When I walked into their facilities for the first time, it was very clear they had done all of their homework, not just yes. in terms of what the health delivery was, but what the industry wanted. And who they were and what they need. That was like, it was a different conversation that I'm used to having with labs, which is like an introduction to, this is porn 101. And right. This was more like, oh, this is what the health components of all of this were. And so they're, I've been very pleased with Sage.
There you go. Shout out to Amy. Also use code stripped by Sia if you want some money off of your testing, by the way, which also I'll plug back into the show notes for everyone else that's listening at home. Yeah, I mean, Ian, this is such a fantastic conversation. I'm really glad they were able to make this happen and for you to be so patient with me and with all the technology mishaps that were on my end this time. But before I let you go, can you tell people where they can find more information about PASS?
Absolutely. We're our website is www.passcertified.org, and we're on X. That's what it's called, X and Instagram as at Pass Certified.
Perfect. Everything is going to be in the show notes, peoples. If you haven't clicked the links already, feel free to go give them a follow, give them a like. They're putting out some great content out there, but also doing really, really amazing work for the community. I've already said that like 10,000 times, but I do mean that. For everyone that is listening at home, it's new episodes every single Sunday dropping at midnight Pacific Standard Time. If you do want to get in touch with me, you can definitely do that on all the channels. So they're all different handles now because one of the accounts got suspended. So Instagram is stripped by Sia podcast. You can find me over there. I am also very active on Twitter/X under stripped by Sia. My website strippedbysia.com if you want to pitch yourself to be on the show. I really enjoy hearing all the interesting episode ideas you guys have going on. And patreon.com/strippedbysia if you do want to financially support the show. And that is, I believe, everything else I need to say. Oh yeah, no, last thing, if you do like the show and you enjoy these free resources, please rate and review an honest rating. I do like 5 stars, I'm not gonna lie, but you can do that on Apple Podcasts. You can also do that on Spotify. Give me the 5s. It really helps people discover the show. Really, it does. I would super appreciate that. And of course, you can also find us on YouTube now. I'm starting to post on there as well under Stripped by Sia podcast as well. So those are all the places. And again, we'll see everyone in for another great episode next Sunday. Ian, thank you so, so much for joining us today and just sharing your expertise on the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate being here.
Thanks so much. Listening to Stripped by Sia, hosted, produced, and edited by Steph Sia, music by Ted D, graphic design by Maria Bellandarama, and photography by Ian Davern.